Welcome back once again to season 4 of the podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Blackwood. As many of you know, I wrote my autobiography as a survivor of human trafficking. It's called Custom Justice. But if you didn't know, you do now. Keeping in line with that, this entire season and last season has been focused on interviewing people who did or plan to write about their own experiences as trauma survivors and how they overcame the past. And as much as we all hate commercials, they are a necessary evil these days. This is what keeps the show on the air. You can also show your support by purchasing one of my mini books or donating through PayPal or leaving a review on whatever platform you listen to this podcast on. You can find the links for the books or donation options in the podcast description. As always, a portion of the proceeds go to local organizations that help fight human trafficking. Hey, folks, welcome back to the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Amanda Blackwood. I am super excited to have with me today a very special guest. We initially talked through Podmatch, I believe it was, quite some time ago, but she's just a remarkable person. Just a couple of things that I love about her is she's a Christian, which is why I picked her to be my special guest for Christmas, of course. But she's also a mom of 4 and a grandma of 6. And as somebody who is a brand new grandmother myself, I absolutely love this about her. And she's got a long-term marriage. She's been married for 40 years and just what an incredible person and to have overcome everything that she has. Robin Melvin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Amanda. I appreciate this time.
I absolutely love your story. I love what it is that you've been able to do with your life. And you're married to an Army veteran. I'm married to a Navy veteran. So those guys would probably butt heads, but love each other dearly. But where are you originally from? Where did you grow up?
I was born and raised most of my life in Savannah, Illinois, a little river town just south of Galena. A lot of people are familiar with Galena, Illinois. So that's where I grew up. Lived a couple years in Utah when my dad went to Vietnam, but then moved back in my adolescent years, junior high through high school. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd heard of Galena, but I don't think I've ever heard of anybody from around that area.
Yeah.
It's kind of a small area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's just dive straight into it. What was the trauma that you had to overcome to be able to have the life that you've got now?
Well, you know, it was sneaky. It's something I didn't really realize till I was almost 50 years old, about 10 years ago, recently, actually. So the trauma was those adolescent years, especially when my dad came back after two tours of civilian work in Vietnam. And he was there when in 75, I believe it was, when Saigon fell to the North, brutal army. And so he experienced a lot there, came back a different person, very much struggling to what we would now know is PTSD and depression and stuff. So but even before that, that most difficult time, you know, it was very much an authoritarian way of parenting that my parents did life. They were older. They were 35-ish when they had me. I'm the youngest of 6. So, I mean, they were just in that era of people who took kind of a strong approach to parenting. I'm sure that's the way they were parented. So these habits and these messages from culture too, not just from my home, really just reinforce this idea, you know, children will be seen, not heard. Because I said so, that's why. There's no discussion, consider back talk. You know, I wasn't, my own opinion wasn't valued. You know, it was just like, this is what I said, so this is the way it is. So that just created in me fear of conflict, a voicelessness, and I know other people might respond differently. They might just get louder, right, to try to be heard, but my personality, I'm sure, played into that as well. It just really does a number on my value, and and then also, I guess about that time too, I had a brother who died suddenly in a car accident when I was 15. Oof. And as was very common as well, it just was never talked about. My dad actually refused. If he heard my mom and I even mention his name in his presence, he would, you know, just draw the line and say, okay, we're not talking about this. So, because I think they parted on bad terms the last time you saw my brother. So that had to have been very difficult. But it was just kind of the times, even when I'd go to school where my brother went through school and graduated there, coaches, teachers, no one said a word. It was just really weird. Now that I'm looking back, it was just not talked about. You just suck it up and soldier on. So yeah. That just kind of reinforced that, you know, you just stuff it. You just stuff everything. And we know, I mean, science will tell us that, you know, when you repress these feelings, they do damage in your body. They stay stuck in you. They have to come out at some point, right?
Right.
So, yeah, that's pretty much the things I brought into adulthood that were, I didn't realize they were from traumatic experiences until I was much older.
Right. And that's very commonly the case. I mean, you grew up with the suck it up and soldier on. I grew up with the suck it up buttercup. It's essentially the same thing. You're telling somebody that their emotions don't matter. It doesn't count. They're not worth paying attention to. This is life. Get on with it. And that's such a dangerous mentality to have.
Yeah, I mean,
and I get that that's the way that they were raised and that it helped them to survive life, but life was harder back when they were growing up and they had more stuff to deal with. You know, your dad fought in Vietnam. He had to suck it up and soldier on or he wouldn't have survived. Children aren't in a war zone. We don't have to treat them like they are.
Right.
So were you always a believer? Did you always have this relationship with God to be able to get you through this, or did that come later in life?
Well, as a child, I did believe there was a God. We didn't go to church much, but I am very grateful that my parents did teach me that. It was just kind of an understood fact. I always just sensed it as well. Not so much of what they said, but just out in nature. And I would just sense, wow, there's more, you know, there's just more. He just spoke to me out there through all that beauty. And so it wasn't until, wow, I was 26 years old, been married about 7 years, had 3 children, was just, I was a good mom. Life was good. You know, we're in the military, but I just had a lot of junk, you know, and like we said, all this stuff that was stuffed, plus some of my own shame from, you know, things that I had done and that I didn't feel great about, just this history. And so that's when I really dug in. I actually wasn't looking for faith, but we had this realtor when we moved to Arkansas that just grabbed onto us and said, you got to come to our church. You know, it was this little country church. And I'm like, yeah, see ya, bye. It was kind of the last thing I really wanted to do. But circumstances that year, I just had some surgery and stuff. So we weren't in our normal party mode. And we had just moved into the area. So we didn't have a lot of friends and stuff. So we said yes to a party, a New Year's Eve party that his church did at the Boys and Girls Club. And I went there and I saw just real people having real fun, which was very different from my past experience, being around people in a church. So it just drew me. I just, it was so hungry for that. And I get choked up thinking about it. But that's when they just grabbed onto us and started loving us immediately. And I was in church, I think, that next Sunday. That was a Friday. And 3 weeks later, I just was drawn to the altar. The tradition was you could go to the altar and pray with the pastor. And that's where I just said, God, take my life. Lead me. Save me from all of this. There's just all this stuff. I needed so much healing. And I literally walked out of that little church that day. My head had to been lifted higher because it just seemed like the day was even just brighter. I can't even describe very well about, yeah. So that was I was 26. So at 30 some years ago, 33 years,
wow.
I've been walking this faith journey. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. So what was the, you know, since this is Christmas Day, let's talk a little bit about Christmas Day. What was the biggest difference between having Christmas Day as a child versus Christmas Day after you were saved?
You know, my Christmases as a kid were actually really cool because my parents made a great effort to make them fun and special. But the difference was after that day, it just took on that whole new meaning. I mean, I kind of knew as a kid, okay, Jesus was born and we're celebrating, but after I accepted Christ into my life and said, you know, save me and lead me, because I don't know how to do this. It just took on, I had small children at the time too. So it just had a, I don't know, a happier tone or more, a more hopeful. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but the meaning of the day just held so much more hope and purpose and future, if that makes sense. It wasn't just this tradition and there's this little baby in the manger and that's who we're, you know, talking about. It was this person that I had a relationship with, that his spirit could live in me. You know, I could learn from him and walk, learn to walk away from the things that used to suck my soul out, right? And I could, so it was just more of a, maybe there was just more life into the day. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. It does make sense. And it's beautiful. You know, I have a very similar experience myself of Christmas was all about the presents, the ones that I was giving to other people and the things that they were opening up.
Yeah.
And then when I developed that relationship with God, with Jesus, it kind of changed all of that for me. And it was, it had nothing to do with the presence anymore. I didn't care about the presence. I wanted to be in church. It wasn't a burden to go to a Christmas service anymore. It was a beautiful moment of reflection and understanding the gift that was given to us. The most important gift.
That's perfect. Yes.
I know exactly what you mean. You got me tearing up over here.
Oh my goodness. It's fun to talk about.
What all helped you to heal from everything that you went through once you recognized that it was existing trauma?
What helped me to heal? Yeah. So initially, and that's what I'll be reading from my book here soon, is when I realized this stuff was happening, I was actually in a counseling room. And so, yes, counseling, when I was writing my book, I did 6 months of art therapy, because about halfway through my book, I just like, you know, writing about this difficult stuff, digging it up so I could, you know, going there so I could get out of there. I like to say, just trying to understand it now as an adult, and to handle it as an adult and not a child. So, yeah, so therapy, with trusted therapists, of course, my family, they didn't always understand, but they were right there to support me. Like, oh yeah, don't cook supper. We understand. Let me do some, you know, I just was very honest with them, because about halfway through my book, I tanked. There was a lot of things peripheral going on in my family, my mom, my sister, and then all this stuff I was doing with my trauma. And I just went face first and into deep depression. So yeah, they were very much there for me. I have a posse of friends who I even today I text them and said, hey, pray for me. I'm going to be on this podcast. And I just, you know, want to be able to articulate. It's hard for me sometimes to articulate, get it from my heart to my head through my mouth, you know. So yeah, definitely people praying for me. And my own relationship. I mean, I cried out to God so many times, working through this, because my book is literally me working through all these things and these different mindsets that I realized I had brought in, you know, victim mindset, chameleon mindset, all these things. So it takes a lot of work, but, that it's not futile. You are stronger when you get to the other side of these things, and you have these people, but you mostly, you know, you have God right there. You have his presence at any moment, to center in on that and just say, God help me. You know, so many times I talk out loud a lot. And so I did that a lot too. And just venting, like venting is huge to help, right? Letting yourself feel the emotions. It can be really scary. But just letting yourself, because they've been stuck in there for so long and it can be scary. And I usually did that a lot on my own when I was alone. But I did allow myself to do it with other people too. Sometimes I would just get up. I remember one time in particular, I was writing something quite difficult. And I remember my counselor telling me to do this. And I just stopped. I pushed away from my desk. I grabbed my backpack and some colored pencils and my notebook and a snack and some water, and just went out to a quiet place, a beautiful little place we have here. It's actually some acreage near a convent. And I just took a hike, and out loud, man, I'm just like, all right, God. And I remember hitting that trail and saying, I want you to take me to the depths so I can reach the heights. You know, it was like, I'm doing this, but I had to get away from the computer. I had to get out and just breathe. So we have to be gentle with ourselves, right? We have to learn to that, all that self-care, trying to eat right and sleeping well. And
mm-hmm. The creativity and the physical exercise, all this stuff is so helpful. But pairing this up with having that firm belief and knowing who God is and knowing that He can get you through this, it's such a powerful experience. I love it.
Yes.
And your book is you're an award-winning author. Your book is called Uncover Your Divine Design. Who Did God Create You to Be? I love this. I know you have a copy of it handy. I would love to have you read for us if you have a moment.
Sure. Okay. Like I said earlier, the setting, it starts right out in my friend who said, hey, come and talk to me about this. She's also a clinical psychologist. So that's a super bonus there. So anyway, the chapter is called Identity Loss. It's the very first chapter. No worries. It's just hiding. And I start with a quote by E.E. Cummings. It takes courage to grow up and become who you really are. So it starts with a question from my counselor, Diana. She says, so if you woke up tomorrow and could do the one thing you've always wanted, no limits on time or money or resources, what would you do? I sat there unmoving, unthinking, really. If I was in a comic strip instead of a counseling room, this is where you sketch a question mark over my head or pencil in those chirping crickets. Beyond growing my faith and helping people, I couldn't articulate one personal goal or dream. What was the hangup? Life was falling into place. My youngest child had just graduated high school, so my husband and I were almost empty nesters. I hear this stresses some women, but not me, sister. For the first time in my adult life, my time was going to be my time. For 30 years, I raised kids and grandkids. I was a homemaker, a homeschooler, and a volunteer for Sunday school, PTA, and vacation Bible school. I led women's ministries, volunteered in youth groups, and counseled girls in pregnancy resource centers. I was the soccer mom who drove a minivan and the neighbor who cooked casseroles and carpooled kids. Alongside this, I was an Army wife. My husband's military and civilian careers included countless separations, 2 deployments, and 13 household moves. I get breathless just thinking about this. I love that season of my life, and for the most part, I rocked it. But after decades of pouring into others, I was so ready to pursue something brand new for me, to feed and grow me. In the weeks before I met with the counselor who asked me that baffling question, my brain buzzed with ideas, but I worried about spending money and wasted time fretting about wasting time. I waited for the perfect decision to appear on the wall like a neon sign framed with flashing arrows. The internal pressure to decide now and the fear of making a wrong choice paralyzed me. So twisted up in a cycle, I finally asked for help. That's how I ended up in the counseling room. And I don't even remember our conversation before that question. If you woke up tomorrow into one thing you always wanted, no limits on time, money, or resources, what would you do? So I thought, why in those cricket moments could I not voice one concrete goal or dream waiting for me at the end of my 40s? Because it exposed my lost identity. And so started the journey to unravel me. We peek back into my childhood to uncover why I was wrapped tight in my roles and responsibilities, in what I did and who I did it for. We discovered a little girl shaped by culture, authoritarian parenting, and a depressed alcoholic father who suffered from PTSD. She had low self-worth, and her fear of conflict often made her timid and voiceless. I was surprised to see how her fears, person, habits still influenced me. So I'm 49 years old at this point. We uncovered messages like children will be seen, not heard, that make it difficult to speak up and make decisions. We talked about the tension in my childhood home and its hard set rules, how I wasn't allowed to disagree, voice an opinion, or even talk about grief. This common authoritarian approach to parenting produces shame and underscores a message that children are inferior. These formed unhealthy thought patterns that skewed my sense of self and stunted my autonomy. I went into adulthood hiding. I walked out of my counselor's office thinking, wow, I'm more messed up than I thought. But I was excited and determined to dig deeper, to uncover the real me. I wanted to see how I got there so I could get out of there. After 23 years of knowing Jesus as Savior and Healer, there was more to see and more to restore. This required a closer look at my childhood, especially my formative adolescent years. So research shows that when we were little girls, between 3 and 6 years old, we adapted to our environments. Without adult reasoning or resources, we created coping skills to feel protected, loved, and valued, which is brilliant. But if those habits don't change, we remain bound by them in adulthood. The scared little girl still lives in us. And while she's resourceful and capable, her protective layers no longer serve her, and they don't allow us to grow all the way up. That's why we get stuck in an emotional loop, especially when we want to move forward. After my appointment with the counselor, I wanted to see how toxic mindsets dictate our internal dialogue and life choices, not to whine, point blame, or wallow in self-pity, but to understand our self-defining moments, those turning points in life that formed our sense of self, those harsh words, bad decisions, and difficult experiences hid us, the real us.
Where can people go to grab a copy of your book?
They can go to Amazon, just type in Robin Melvin or Uncover Your Divine Design. They can go to my publisher's website, which is crossrivermedia.com, and they can even read the first chapter free there if they'd like before they decide to purchase. And
very
my book
nice.
Digs into the promise of Romans 12:2, that we can be changed by changing the way we think. It all starts and start in our head. We have to change our thoughts so we can change our life.
That's such an important message for people to hear, especially right now. Like I said, this is airing on Christmas Day, and sometimes this is the hardest holiday of the year, especially for people who have survived any kind of trauma. They're feeling really isolated and alone, and you are offering them help and hope and showing them that there's hope available to them in another great book, the Bible.
Yes.
I love
yes,
this.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. And John 10:10, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But Jesus says that he has come to give us life, and not only just a regular life, right? An abundant life. And that's what I'm after. I'm after all I can grab in this life. And I am so determined to just throw everything that was meant for evil in my life to throw it right back in our enemy's face and use it for good. That's redemption, baby.
Amen. Absolutely. So who inspires you the most?
Who inspires me the most?
Yeah.
In general? Oh my goodness. That's a, why don't I have a good answer for that, or a quick answer? Who inspires me the most? I think about my daughter. She's 28 years old, and she's just this beautiful human being, this hardworking, sassy, but gentle human being. She inspires me to be better, All my children do. And I have a lot of cheerleaders in my life. But yeah, so I guess that's probably the easy answer, but yeah. Yeah, but I mean, in this world, I mean, obviously God's word just inspires me. Just really getting to know Jesus and how he lived completely inspires me. You know, I love to watch The Chosen.
Oh, yes. The show is so amazing. It has helped so many people around the world to understand parts of the Bible that they could not seem to grasp before watching this show.
Yeah, yeah. It just becomes real, and it just becomes doable, if that's the right word, achievable. Right. That's not the right word either, but it's like, wow, these people were real.
Yeah.
But they were really messed up, but they were really cool at the same time, you know?
Yeah. My favorite character, honestly, Matthew, hands down. I absolutely adore Matthew.
Isn't he adorable?
Oh, I my know. Gosh. He's so sweet. So for anybody who hasn't watched the show, check it out. It's such a great show. Then have a conversation with us about it. If people are looking to reach out to you to ask you questions and maybe ask you to be on their podcast or to interview you on radio or TV, how would they reach out to you?
Well, they can email me at robinkmelvin.com or at gmail.com. I'd love to have an email. They can go to my website, robinmelvin.com. That's what that is. They can, you know, get in touch with me there. I'm on Facebook. I have an author page, Robin Melvin Author, and I have a regular page, just Robin Melvin. They can private message me.
Fantastic. And I normally only have one last question that I ask my guests, but since this is airing on Christmas, I have to ask, what's your favorite Christmas song?
My favorite Christmas song. Wow, you're catching me. You know what it is? It's Nat King Cole, A Christmas Song. Isn't that the one that's called Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire? Isn't that just called A Christmas Song? Yeah, Nat King Cole. I just singing that song is just, I know it's not a spiritual song, but it's just, it just does it for me. I think it takes me back and to some good memories, you know? I like that one.
Well, the voice of Nat King Cole does that for a lot of people.
Right.
I love Nat King Cole and Bing Crosby, and I have a Christmas playlist of nothing but their music every year.
They could sing the ABC song, and I think I would like it.
Oh, especially Bing Crosby, because you know he'd have put that spin in there. Oh,
yeah.
Just a little side note. When I was 3, I was convinced I was going to grow up to marry Bing Crosby someday.
Oh my gosh. We're kind of kindred spirits, I think, because I love that stuff too.
You know, I believe it. All right. So my one last question, it's my favorite question of the episode always. And I try to ask this of every single guest. What is one thing that you truly love about yourself that's not related to your physical appearance?
About myself that's not related to my physical experience or I got myself sidetracked in my head. What I love about myself, I think I have good discernment about people, about situations, which can be really good. I love about myself, I'm very nurturing, and I think it's a good thing. You have to learn balance with that when your kids get older. I think I'm a good nurturer. I love to feed people, especially little kids. I'm like, get over here before you have that candy. Did you have something healthy? You know, I'm that person. And that was even before I was a grandma. So I think those are good qualities about me. I think I love to help people practically, like, hey, can I bring you some muffins? Can I bring you a casserole? You know, those kinds of things.
Awesome. I love that. And, you know, I got to say, it's people like you in my neighborhood when I was a kid that made sure that I didn't starve. My mother was a terrible cook and hated doing it. So I ate at the neighbor's house as often as possible.
Oh, I love that. We need to bring all that back. Like, I hope people have neighborhoods where they still have neighbors like that. Like, come on in. We got, you know, extra seat.
Right. That sense of community, that sense of togetherness. You know, we need more of that. And we've lost a lot of that.
Yeah.
Robin, thank you so much for coming on my podcast today. I appreciate you. I love your story. I love your uplifting attitude and your beautiful smile. And I know the listeners can't see your smile, but they can certainly hear it.
Oh, good. This has been a pleasure. I appreciate so much this opportunity to talk to you.
I have a feeling that we're going to be talking again soon.
Awesome.
If you've enjoyed tonight's episode, please make sure you check out the episode description. There you'll find links on how you can learn more about this guest, links to connect with them on social media, and how to support the podcast. Remember, I don't get paid to do this. My boss is a bit tight-fisted. I can say that. I work for myself. In short, this show really is all about the guest. If you've enjoyed their interview, please feel free to let them know. You can also tune in to my other podcast, Growth from Darkness, which is co-hosted by a lovely lady from Australia. We talk about what trauma responses are and healthy ways to move beyond the past. For more information, just go to growthfromdarkness.com. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/growthfromdarkness.